Good morning. It's such a blessing to be here today together to see all of your faces because we're all here because of Jesus. And that is such an encouraging thing in the day and time in which we live that there are still people that bow before King Jesus. And that's what we're talking about in this series of lessons as we're looking together through the gospel story from Matthew's record of it. And this morning, as we launch into Matthew chapter number 13, let me start this way. If Christianity is false, it is of no importance. But if Christianity is true, it is of ultimate importance. But the one thing, the only thing that Christianity cannot be is somewhat important. This is paraphrasing the words of the world-renowned theologian and author, Christian author of yesteryear, C.S. Lewis. But I believe Lewis is exactly right, and unfortunately, we live in a time when lots of folks think Christianity is of somewhat importance. And yet, here in Matthew chapter number 13, we find that Jesus is trying to drive us and his audience to a decisive decision about his identity and what he is really claiming to be, and that is king. Jesus came announcing, we've seen so far in Matthew's record of the gospel, Jesus came proclaiming and announcing the kingdom, the message that he is king, and you can't be indifferent about that message. And yet, intense division began to grow between those that were receiving Jesus as king and those that were opposing him, as we saw last week. But everybody's got to make a decision. Now, in the midst of this great opposition that is building about Jesus and his claims, especially from the religious establishment, Jesus begins telling a bunch of stories in the form of parables to compare the nature of the kingdom of heaven with everyday familiar common things. Jesus uses these parables as a means of revealing truth to those that have hearts and minds that are hungry to receive it, while those that are resisting the truth are blinded to the deeper reality. This is what Jesus means whenever he explains the reason why he speaks in parables. Jesus begins teaching this way, and in verse 12 he says, "Whoever has, more will be given, that they'll have an abundance, and whoever does not have, even what they have, will be taken away." Jesus is driving his audience toward a decisive decision regarding one singular question in all of these stories that he tells in this chapter. And the question is this: what will I do with Jesus? Each one of these parables is asking a nuanced question about how we will respond to this ultimate question. So we're going to look at some nuanced questions that Jesus is posing before us in each one of these parables as we look at Jesus and his kingdom in this lesson. The king and his kingdom. What are you going to do with these claims in Matthew chapter 13? The first question is, what is going to be your response? In verses 1 through 9, and then also the explanation in verses 18 through 23, Jesus is driving this question home. What is your response to what I've been saying about the coming of this kingdom? In this parable of the soils, we find that the kingdom comes to places where the soil and the seed get together. That's where the kingdom is found. The seed is the message of the announcement of King Jesus and his gospel, and the soil is the hearts of those that receive it. So everywhere that the seed and the soil meet, the kingdom comes. The kingdom comes to the life of a person whose heart is ready to receive the message of Christ. Now, some hearts will intellectually ponder the message of the kingdom, but will never allow that message to get any further than the mind. They won't allow it to penetrate the heart because the heart is like hard soil. But there are other hearts that emotionally are very receptive to the kingdom message, but they have no real roots that grow deep in commitment. This is the heart that is like shallow soil. There are still other hearts that are preoccupied with so many things in life that they have no fruit that comes as a result because their lives are filled with so many things that choke out the king and his rule. This is the soil that is filled with thorns. But there are some that honestly hear and receive the message of the kingdom. And that seed is planted in this good soil, and it brings forth fruitful and faithful disciples who willingly bow before the king. This is the good soil. So by this first parable, Jesus is holding up a mirror to you and me. And he's asking, what is going to be your response? What kind of soil will you be? What kind of heart do you have? How will you receive the seed message of the king and his kingdom? The next question, though, is, well, if Jesus, in fact, is supposed to be the king who is ruling over the worldwide kingdom of God, then how in the world do you explain the fact that so much evil is still persistent? If Jesus' kingdom has come, how do you still explain all of the bad things that we see happening in the world? Well, if God's kingdom is coming so powerfully, why does society not seem to be changing? Jesus tells a parable to illustrate why that is. The parable of the weeds and the wheat. You see, the seeds of the kingdom are sown in the world by Jesus and his followers. But also there is someone else sowing a different kind of seed. The devil is sowing seed that brings forth weeds. And both the wheat and the weeds are growing up together in the world. But there is a day that is coming when a silent revolution of God's kingdom is going to be growing in the lifestyle of Jesus' followers all over the world. In fact, that is even now happening. But there's also a day coming when those that have done evil will be thrown into the blazing furnace, Jesus says, here in verses 24 through 30 and verses 36 through 43. But the sons and the daughters of the king in that day will shine like the sun. But if Jesus really is the king, then why does the kingdom seem to be so insignificant in the world? Well, Jesus has an answer for that. In this parable in verses 31 through 32 of the mustard seed, Jesus shows here that the kingdom is like a microscopic seed that shows phenomenal growth when it is planted, and the result is a huge garden plant that is so large, in fact, that birds from far distances come to roost in its branches. The seed that Jesus plants will grow, and it in fact did grow, far beyond where it was initially planted in Judea in the Middle East. And it has grown into a large plant that has provided a home for people of all the nations of all the world. The kingdom might seem on the surface to be so small and insignificant, but it will not stay that way. Springing forth from one single man, Jesus of Nazareth, the presence of his kingdom is now known throughout every nation and corner of this planet. But the kingdom of heaven does sometimes seem obscure and hidden in the world. Why is that, Jesus? In verse number 33, he tells a parable about yeast that is hidden in a lump of dough. A small bit of yeast that is hidden there, soon when it has done its work, will permeate the entire loaf of bread. In the same way, the kingdom of heaven has a pervasive influence throughout society. In fact, throughout history, Christians have been the ones that have pioneered medical care and social work and education and the liberation of women and slaves and the defense of prisoners and the aged and orphans, those whom society has neglected. Seemingly, the kingdom of God is hidden and obscure, but once planted in society, the kingdom has had and continues to have a tremendous impact upon our society. Well, with the next parables in verses 44 through 45, Jesus shows with a parable of the lost treasure in the field and a valuable pearl of great price. He asks the question, how do people find the kingdom? Jesus shows that there is an unspeakable value of the kingdom, and it is so valuable, in fact, that it is worth any sacrifice. Like a man who is plowing a field, who stumbles upon a buried, hidden treasure, he will sell all of his possessions to buy the field to unearth this treasure. In the same way, there are some people that find the kingdom seemingly by accident. They stumble upon it, and then they find its great value, and they give their entire lives to it. But there are others that are like the merchant who is looking for a great pearl, who is has great knowledge of pearls in the world, and after a long and patient search, he finds a pearl that is supreme over all the rest, and therefore he sells what he has in order to purchase that great pearl. There are many pearls that shine and sparkle in your life and mine. Many pearls on the market of life. Many faiths, many ideologies, various different worldviews. But none of them compare to the unsurpassed value of Jesus and His kingdom. And therefore, when you understand the worth of the kingdom, it is worth sacrificing everything in order to obtain it. These series of parables are brought to a dramatic conclusion with the last one that Will read for us just a moment ago. In verses 47 through 52, Jesus circles back to his initial question and says, "What's your decision going to be already? What are you going to decide? Are you going to continue to oppose me? Or are you going to embrace the beauty and the value of the kingdom that I have come to rule over?" Jesus gives this parable of the net that is cast in the sea. When the final day comes, where will you stand? There is a day of judgment. A day of separation that is coming. Contrary to the pluralistic view of our modern culture, Jesus is crystal clear. On that day, not everyone will be saved. It is not our job to determine who the real Christians are. That task belongs to the one who holds the net. That task belongs to God on the final day. But make no mistake, on that final day, and that day is coming for us all, the net will be cast. And the question is, will you show that you, by your life, have been caught in the net of Jesus' kingdom? That you've bowed your life before Him and made Him the King? Or will you find that you have been swimming your whole life down the stream of your own current, and now that current is headed for the blazing furnace? What will your response be? The King has a kingdom, and Jesus wants you and I to ask ourselves, what are we going to do with it? What are we going to do with Jesus? Someone has observed that a wife or a husband who is 85% faithful to their spouse is not really faithful or loyal at all. By the same token, there is no such thing as part-time loyalty to Jesus. Make no mistake. So how important is the King and His kingdom to you? Jesus encourages all of us to seek Him first. Because whether or not you have made Him King of your life, whether or not you recognize Him to be King, make no mistake, He is the King. The King of all creation. And He is the reason you're here, and He is the one to whom you will ultimately, before whom you will ultimately stand. And He wants to be your friend, and He wants to take you home to be in His eternal kingdom forever. So what are you going to do with Him? Will you oppose Him? Will you serve Him half-hearted? Or will you give your life fully and bow before the King? If we can help you in taking those steps, we want to do so. If we can pray for you, if the shepherds of our flock can in some way tend your soul, they are available in the library at this time. If I can help you in any way, please speak with me as we close in the foyer. But what are you going to do with Jesus? The King has a kingdom, and He wants you to be a part of it. Will you come and be born again of water and the Spirit and be added by the Lord to His kingdom? If we can help you in any way, come to the King as we stand and as we sing.